Welcome to A Skeptic's Guide to Conspiracy, a bi-weekly podcast dedicated to the examination of conspiracy theory, conspiracy fact, and those who promote these theories. I will be your host, Mike Bowler, as I examine a conspiracy theory, applying critical thinking and skepticism to better understand and seek out the truth behind conspiracy theories. So before I get started, I'd like to set the tone a little bit with a clip from Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie talking to Joshua Abraham about his father's work on the book, None Dare Call It Conspiracy. Take a listen to this.
This book, None Dare Call It Conspiracy, gives us the blueprint, the plan, the written confessions of the laws they've created, and the agenda of the one world government ran by the socialistic powers of the Illuminati and the Freemasons. Now keep in mind, people who read this book, they get really shocked at first. They get really drawn into this kind of conflict that this can't be real. Like, all this information, it can't be real. Because it's really astounding, George, and it's really shocking. And when you read this information, and we have all the proof, you do the research yourself.
Mm-hmm. And it's
and
right
that's
there.
That's when you go outside the lines. And when people, after they read this book, they go outside themselves, and they do their own research, and then they come to a pause. And they're like, oh my God, everything in this book is absolutely true. There's no fiction about it. This is not a conspiracy theory anymore, George. This is a conspiracy fact.
Now, this clip came from a Coast to Coast AM show, January 21st, 2014, talking about perhaps one of the more modern versions of this Illuminati conspiracy. And I've read it. I've read it cover to cover. I've actually referenced it quite a bit. And the unfortunate reality of this book is there's nothing really there saying who is really responsible. It's really just a rehash of the old Jewish conspiracy. And for this episode, I will be covering the Illuminati conspiracy. This will be part two, where I try to look at a timeline of this particular conspiracy. And I do mean try, because when I started putting it together and doing all the research, there really isn't a lot of factual information or facts supporting this particular conspiracy. So I'm going to start by trying to organize it a little bit, give you an idea what this conspiracy is about. There's going to be at least three versions of this conspiracy. They all kind of sound the same, and there are some factual information in them, but we'll try to put something together here. Now, the basic concept of this conspiracy is that there's a group of elites who has an agenda to create a one-world government and a one-world economic system that would be used to subjugate the world's populations. So the first manifestation of this conspiracy actually occurred in the late 1700s, early 1800s, in the writings of Augustine Birrell and John Robinson. While technically not a conspiracy along the lines of what we see today, but early writings on secret societies in general, with Freemasonry as in particular. Birrell and Robinson independently wrote books and pamphlets attempting to expose a conspiracy by the remains of the Bavarian Illuminati, and that they had infiltrated the various secret societies in Europe, most notable the Freemasons. This is loosely based on the assumptions that the Bavarian Illuminati, led by Adam Weishaupt, when it was dissolved by Karl Theodor, Elector of Bavaria, in 1784, Weishaupt fled to Gotha, where he wrote a series of works on Illuminism, including a complete history of the persecutions of the Illuminati in Bavaria, a picture of Illuminism, and an apology for the Illuminati and an improved system of Illuminism between 1785 and 1787. Now, what really happened to the Bavarian Illuminati does not seem to be too clear at this point. Apparently, the government in Bavaria caught wind of some writings or thoughts that may have run contrary to political systems in Bavaria. A general order abolishing all secret societies followed, and apparently arrests were made. That probably explains why Weishaupt left Bavaria for Gotha. Borel was convinced that Weishaupt contributed heavily to the thought behind the French Revolution in 1789. Borel had to flee France for England, where he proceeded to write books on the Illuminati conspiracy. Now, in Robson's case, he became disenfranchised with the concepts of the Enlightenment, in particular its role in the rethinking of religion and mankind's placement in the universe in relationship to God. Convinced that the Freemasons and the Illuminati were heavily involved with this paradigm shift in theological thought. Again, in Robson's case, the main target was Freemasonry and the idea that Weishaupt and his Illuminati had infiltrated the various Mason groups. So this early attack on the Illuminati was based in an attack on the Age of Enlightenment. I won't go into too many details, but the idea is that this was a period of time where philosophers and science began to push the boundaries of knowledge to new areas and a general rethinking of mankind's role in the universe. By the late 1700s, the world was round. We were no longer the center of the universe. We were no longer the center of the solar system. On the religious front, the Roman Catholic Church had been under fire for many years, and by this time, Protestantism and the various branches of that had become much more popular in Europe than the Roman Catholic Church. Even the monarchies at the time had begun to adopt Enlightenment ideas, while not going as far as doubting the divine right of kings. And of course, there would be a counterthought to all this, and this is where the original Illuminati conspiracy comes from. Now, it would be almost 200 years before the concept of an Illuminati conspiracy would resurface. Now, in the 1930s, during the height of the Great Depression in the United States, a number of writers began to question the government's action in trying to deal with the financial crisis. These early writers tended to point out deficiencies in government policies. One of the more prolific writers is John T. Flynn. Trained as an economist, had taken to journalism and written on topics of economics for a number of Midwestern newspapers. Eventually, he would land with the Chicago Tribune, where much of his anti-New Deal writings were getting national attention. This is roughly the same time when Henry Ford began to support the Detroit Free Press and encourage writers to also question the government's action. And by the late 1930s, numerous groups had begun various campaigns against Franklin Roosevelt, the New Deal, and the United States' general support of Great Britain when the Second World War started. Taking the lead, John T. Flynn proceeds to write numerous articles and books in an attempt to bring the question of the government's economic plans. Henry Ford and his Detroit Free Press attempted to link the financial hardships of the United States to a Jewish conspiracy. And roughly during this time, Father Charles Coughlin from Detroit, actually from Royal Oak, Michigan, which is a suburb of Detroit, began a campaign against Franklin Roosevelt and the Jewish banking interests. Now, while most of this was geared toward promoting isolationism within the United States, the attempt to link the government's pro-British intervention to a Jewish conspiracy was thinly veiled, mixed in with these stories. With the attack on Pearl Harbor, much of this rhetoric ended with Coughlin shutting down his operation. With the outbreak of war, Ford continued his anti-Jewish campaign until the discovery of the death camps in Germany, where he eventually backed off his rhetoric. But John T. Flynn temporarily shut down his beliefs and tended just to attack home front programs such as rationing laws and procedures. But John Flynn would resurrect his beliefs within a mere hours of the signing of the Japanese surrender, a multi-page expose on the attack on Pearl Harbor and the belief that Washington knew catapulted Flynn back into the anti-government, anti-New Deal crusade. So with the end of the Second World War and the realization of the communist threat to the United States, a fresh batch of writers undertook various campaigns to expose a secret society that would be responsible for the various communist takeovers in Eastern Europe, the loss of China to the communists, and the leaking of nuclear secrets to the Soviets. Now, while most of these writers tended to point to communists within Hollywood or the State Department, writers like Ezra Pound and John T. Flynn would encourage other writers, such as Myron Fagan and Eustace Smullen, to attack Jewish international banking and make it sound like they're responsible for the creation of the Federal Reserve, caused the Bolshevik Revolution, and the creation of the Communist Party in Russia. And with the rest of the world, if all possible, the reason why we fought two world wars, a war in Korea and Vietnam, and the cause of all the financial recessions since the end of the Second World War. In the Myron Fagan version of the Illuminati conspiracy, it would start with the Bavarian Illuminati and Adam Weishaupt. And Fagan's claim is that the Bavarian Illuminati was dissolved. These people disappeared into the world woodwork, never exactly saying that they joined the Freemasons or any secret group, would claim that this Illuminati was responsible for financing Napoleon and his wars through the Rothschild banking conglomerate, profiting from the ebbs and tides of war. Fagan would also make the claim that the Council of Vienna, which was a peace conference following the Napoleonic Wars, was that the Illuminati Rothschilds attempted a creation of a one world government. But this was shot down by the Tsar of Russia, which of course made the Rothschilds angry, and the Rothschilds waited 70 years before they created the Bolshevik Revolution and got Lenin back into the country. The only problem is this Council of Vienna never met in one large group, and these were just generally individual countries meeting to decide borders and reparations. In the case of Ezra Pound, he found himself in trouble after the war because he wrote a number of anti-American articles and had actually gone on radio in Italy denouncing the United States. It's quite interesting that in Pound's case, he got a much lighter treatment from the U.S. government than other Americans who had spoken out against the war and had actually aided and abetted the enemy during the war. Pound spent years in a mental institution. After his release, though Mullins would argue that he visited Pound in the mental institution, Pound would associate with various neo-Nazis, Ku Klux Klan members, and anti-Semitic writers. Eustace Mullins would claim to be a protege of Pound, but again, Pound never really admitted that he had any association with Mullins. But no, Mullins would write numerous tracts claiming the Federal Reserve was part of an international Jewish conspiracy and part of an Illuminati conspiracy. So between Mullins and Fagan, this would be the inspiration for much of the more mainstream Illuminati conspiracies. You'll find much of the same work in other conspiracy writers such as Gary Adams and John Abraham in their book, None Dare Call a Conspiracy, and much of what Jim Marr's early Illuminati books and radio hosts like Alex Jones pretty much copies and or plagiarizes this work. In the third form of this conspiracy, this is where it really gets crazy. And most of these claims is that the Illuminati are part of a much older society that originated in ancient times. Some like to refer to its origins in ancient Egypt, mostly from the references in Freemasons to Hiram Abiff, who was allegedly the architect and builder of ancient Egyptian temples. This form of the conspiracy is relatively new. I have had trouble finding early manifestations of this conspiracy, but it seems to come from a mix of ancient alien proponents, Knights Templar concealing the Jesus bloodline proponents, and those who believe that there's a satanic connection and the rise of Satanism in the world. The craziest version I've heard goes like this. Lucifer or Satan has sent demons in the form of reptilian aliens who use gray aliens to kidnap humans for various sex experiments, who are concealed by the Illuminati, who maintains control of politics, commerce, science, and the media to keep the 90% unaware of what's going on. With the ultimate end game is that 90% going to be wiped out to create a new feudal system where leaders of industry will now become kings of these remaining people. This particular rendition of the conspiracy has been put forward by Joshua Abraham, son of John Abraham, who wrote the book None Dare Call It Conspiracy. But this has components that can be attributed to David Icke and his reptilian shape-shifting aliens, Jordan Maxwell and his belief in Egyptian and Greek mythology being true, and just the words have been modified to hide true meanings, and Jim Mars, Tex Mars, no relations, and many other religious end times believers who believe in an Armageddon where the Antichrist will return and eventually destroy the world. So really just spot an Illuminati conspiracy component, it'll have one of the following statements. Banks controlled by international bankers, that is, Jewish bankers. Government false flags. Recession or depression imminent. Elimination of civil rights or constitutional rights. police state apparatus, satanic or Luciferian agenda. The main component of the Illuminati conspiracy is the control of money. Many, if not all, of the Illuminati conspiracy talk centers around the control and creation of money. One of the most common statements you will hear from the conspiracy theorist is that international or Jewish bankers created the Federal Reserve to take control from the government, the creation and accumulation of money. You will also hear that the international or Jewish bankers forced the United States off the gold standard and turned our money into a fiat currency that is controlled by this Federal Reserve. A fairly popular term nowadays, and this is coming from the conspiracy theorists, has been the government false flag. The claim is Sandy Hook shooting and the Boston Marathon bombings have been staged events to get American people to call for gun control or increased police state surveillance. One of the ongoing predictions is that conspiracy radio hosts or economic conspiracy theorists like to use is the imminent collapse of the economy. Again, the predictions are usually extremely dire and that it'll be a total collapse of the economy. Money becomes worthless, so you'll need to have gold to conduct transactions and guns to protect yourself from the rampaging hordes of those who didn't have gold to keep them from raping and pillaging your homes and families. And as a continuation of the government false flag, there's always been this constant attack on various civil liberties and constitutional rights. Besides the obvious gun control laws, the increased security at airports, and the various programs that deal with potential terrorism, there were other attacks on constitutional rights. This is usually centered around property rights and the perceived attack on religious rights. And of course, with the curtailment of civil rights and constitutional rights, we begin to introduce government surveillance upon our activities. Now, with the NSA surveillance scandal aside, many of the conspiracy theorists have been opposed to any type of surveillance. This includes street cameras, registry databases for gun ownership, car ownership, property ownership, and anything else that collects data on your day-to-day activities. And coming out of the more religious or superstitious types, you'll hear terms like Luciferian or satanic conspiracies. This is based on end-of-world revelations and biblical prophecy, generally loosely based upon various ancient civilizations, or more likely it's just a general attack on the Catholic Church. Many of those who believe in a satanic conspiracy generally point to the God of the Catholic Church is actually Lucifer, again making these very bizarre connections between ancient Egyptians' belief in the sun god and the one light being Lucifer. So to kind of pull this all this information together, as you can tell, it's very not, to be honest, I don't think it's terribly good how I presented it, but the reality has been that a lot of claims are being made to support this secret society of Illuminati that is supposed to be controlling the world. I find very little evidence that there is any such organization, and the organizations that have been attributed to them are not necessarily Illuminati organizations. So who these people are, what they are they real, is really anyone's guess. And to be perfectly honest, I mean, conspiracy theorists love this kind of ambiguity. So for my next episode, I will actually have some of the more crazier claims of this Illuminati. I'll try to clarify some more of the what I've talked about in this show, and hopefully give you a really good idea of what this conspiracy is about, what it's supposed to be, and what it isn't.
I can no longer sit back and allow communist infiltration, communist indoctrination, communist subversion, and the international communist conspiracy to sap and impurify all of our precious bodily fluids.
Now, there has been some interesting news on the conspiracy front this week, but I'm going to hold off till the next show where I can get some more information and the situation kind of stabilize. And this has to do with the Las Vegas shooting and their connection to Alex Jones and his radio program. So I'm going to save that for next week. So I don't have any new stories, no news on the podcast front. So be sure to check out my various other projects, The Irreverent Skeptics at irreverentskeptics.com and the BitSpot Report at report@jdragon.com. Thank you for listening to A Skeptic's Guide to Conspiracy. You can find my show notes and links to research material at mikeboehler.com. That's MikeBohler.com. Feel free to leave me feedback at feedback@mikeboehler.com. If there's a conspiracy you're interested in or wish to contribute more information to this or previous topics, feel free to send that to research@mikeboehler.com. A Skeptic's Guide to Conspiracy is a proud member of the Dumbass Media Network. Be sure to check out other great podcasts at dumbassmedia.info. Intro music is Unchained Tsarina from danosongs.com. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time. Thank you. Good night.